I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating 25 years in business at Lighthouse and just entering our 12th year of doing open line programs. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2019 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. And over 12 years, we've covered about every business topic you can possibly imagine. So if you're having any challenges or opportunities in your company, you can find the subject matter on our site. Our third book, Cracking the High Performance Team Code, is now available, and we also offer skills testing and 360s, which has been a huge hit with our clients. Our topic today is the organized executive. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. We'll be hosting the program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the very first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including skills testing, 360s, interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management and supervisory and leadership workshops, and much more. We have an office in Taiwan and the UK, so if you have an operation in Asia or Europe and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas of how to best interact with a U.S.-based company, just let us know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to the number of calls that we get from many of our clients both domestically and globally to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today. So our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions in during our program, or you can save ideas, write them down, and we'll open up the line at the end of our discussion today. I want to introduce a special friend of mine, business colleague, a very cool person, extremely knowledgeable individual in the topic we're going to cover today. His name is Bruce Breyer. If you don't know Bruce, you're going to get to know him today. He is an organizational consultant who in 2018 is in his 41st year of working with and presenting to busy people in all kinds of leadership, executive, and management positions. As a facilitator, advisor, strategist, and coach, Bruce provides very practical suggestions for all who participate to become more effective, efficient, and organized within a relatively short period of time. He also does an extensive amount of business planning facilitation, helping growing companies and organizations to continually define, articulate, and communicate goals and strategies for organizational growth. The result is a culture that is more proactive in their approach to achieve fiscal year priorities. Bruce has been a resource speaker for Vistage since 1985. It's a long time, Bruce. And by the end of his 34th year, he will have presented to well over 1,000 Vistage member groups in presenting two topics, the organized executive and the goal-setting executive. He has addressed and worked with between 15,000 and 20,000 member executives and senior staff members during his career. The basic philosophy of Bruce's work is that busy people simply do not take nor seem to have sufficient time to step back and tune up their systems of organizational effectiveness. The result is that leaders and managers are oftentimes more overloaded, overwhelmed, overextended, and overcommitted than desired, causing higher levels of stress and lower levels of effectiveness. Bruce's programs, his workshops, and coaching provide very practical methods on the topic of choice. Participants typically walk away with significant systems and strategies that can be applied almost instantly. The results have been excellent, and the need for tuning up organizationally is greater than ever today. And I got to vouch for the clients that we work with together. When Bruce steps in, they end in a completely different place. much more profitable and effective. Bruce is headquartered in La Jolla, California, which is a suburb of San Diego. I also want to mention, I met Bruce many years ago at a presentation. I still remember what he shared. I still follow through on the directions that he gave after all these years. And Bruce wore the coolest suit that day, and I went out and bought one. I feel privileged to have Bruce with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration begins at the end of our program today for our next topic for next month is the power of focus. Bruce, welcome to Open Line.
Thank you, Dana, and especially a thank you for those kind words. Nice to be with everybody today. Let's get started with the topic, the organized executive. Over the years, and as Dana pointed out, I've been doing this for a lot of years, one of the things that I've heard from people in leadership and management positions especially is that they would like to be, and actually they'd like to have, A players within their organization. Dana, are you still on?
Yes.
Okay, I'm having a little difficulty moving the slides. Excuse us, everybody.
Let's see what's
working a moment ago.
Let me try tapping it real quick here.
Okay.
There we go. Is that the right slide?
So that got ahead a little bit, so let's go back.
Let me go back here. Takes a second. Not sure why it's doing this. Technology's great when it works.
It was working up until the time we started.
That's right. I'm not sure.
Are you
Bruce, why did you just keep going, and we'll ignore the slides, and you can just share from an audio standpoint today.
Okay. So many executives especially have said these words to me. I'd like to have all A players, capital A, which led me to question, what exactly is an A player? And I came up with the letters C, M, and O. So what do those letters mean? Well, the first contributing factor to an A player, I decided, was to be very competent. What does competent mean? The individual has the talent, the ability, the knowledge to perform what they are expected to achieve. So it begins with competency. The M is for motivated. That's a positive energy or an attitude. That's a passion for what people do. But just those two, competency and motivation, were not enough in my opinion. And I thought, you know, if we lose sight of, or if we don't include the organizational component of an A player's characteristics, then the administrative part of the position suffers. So the O is, of course, for organization or organize, and that's producing commitments, promises, and priorities on time, mistake-free. All three of those constitute, in my mind, what I would consider an A player. So as a first assignment, if anybody is interested, you might want to, number one, determine how strong each of you are in these three areas. Are you as competent as you need to be? Do you still have the passion and the energy and the attitude to perform in your current role? And for today, very importantly, are you as organized as you can be, need to be, and even should be? For the leaders in online, you might want to go through your organizational chart and put these letters in every box where they fit. And you might find certain people are one or two, but not all three, calling for either coaching or training, especially for the second half of this year. A players. Well, what's the problem with having all A players, if that's the right word? What's the challenge? Well, essentially, the challenge is the word that has been the most common in over 40 years of my being a consultant, and that's the word busy. In fact, you ask somebody today how they're doing, they're likely to say busy, as though some of them treat it as a badge of success. Well, busy, if you think about it, does not necessarily give off a positive vibration to people who are asking. In fact, I recommend to many people not to say busy. It can actually turn other people off. Generally speaking, busy people have too much to do and not enough time to get everything done. There's too many projects, promises, and even priorities that they're committed to, yet not enough uninterrupted time throughout the day, throughout the week, to get those things done. They have too many meetings and appointments and not enough time to prepare for them or download and debrief from them. Too many interruptions, disruptions, and distractions, and not enough time to stay focused and keep on track. Excessive numbers of emails still pouring in and not enough time to manage and feel in control of the email environment. They have so many things they'd like to do in their personal lives, yet so many busy people have opted to expand their work days to get the things on their plate accomplished. And when you add more time to work or even thinking about work, something has to give, and that area is usually one's personal life. If you could relate to some or all of those things already, the organized executive will present during the next half hour or so very practical tips, tools, and techniques to become and feel more organized in everything that you do. So the organizational suggestions that I bring to you today begin by asking a question. And that question is, how many of you are acutely clear of the top priority goals of your position? If someone were to ask you to recite the top three goals of your position for this fiscal year, could you do it without looking them up? Most people cannot. Over 30 years ago, I came to the conclusion that job descriptions were not very effective personal management tools. And something occurred to me one day, and that was we needed something in the workplace beyond a job description. And I came up with the idea of something called a success description. And a success description is essentially a one-page business plan for a position. And it defines a number of things. It defines, number one, the priority goals of the position. And I recommend those be the top three goals of the position. Now, here we run into an interesting situation. An assignment I recommend to CEOs, senior and middle-level managers, is that they ask their direct reports to submit to them by email a list of what the direct report feels would be their top three goals of their position. Simultaneously, I recommend to the leaders to do the same thing, write out what they believe the top three goals of the positions are for their direct reports, and then compare notes. It is borderline astounding how often a disconnection is in place. However, it's a positive exercise because it accelerates the inevitable. Sorry for the slides, keep jumping around, trying to get them to synchronize here.
It's probably a 10 to 30 second wait, so it will pop up.
Okay. So it begins with priority goals. As we go into the second half of the year, I would urge everybody online to make it a higher priority to establish those top three goals for the balance of the year. Underneath that, once the goals are established, is to formulate an organizational strategy. In other words, whomever is in possession of a success description now needs to come up with a plan of action, how they're going to accomplish those goals, which is followed by metrics. Metrics, as I presume most, if not all of you know, are key indicators. They're tracking mechanisms. They are spreadsheets and even graphs that frequently and regularly show how a person is doing. So the success description is the first technique I offer to everybody. It's a little unorthodox in today's business world. If you feel that job descriptions are not adequate, not reviewed enough, not written well, things of that nature, it might be time for a success description. Once it's established, a monthly review between direct reports and their direct supervisor is recommended. Once per month, there are four questions to be asked. And Dana, I'm getting a bad gateway message here, so I can't move the slides anymore.
Okay, I will.
Okay, so the next slide, if we could put it on, but if not, I'll just verbally tell it to everybody. There's a four-question agenda that needs to be covered, in my opinion, every month in a one-to-one monthly review. The first question from the manager to the direct report is, how did you do last month on your top three goals and strategy? Show me your metrics. And that direct report will show either a winning or a losing picture. If they're winning, it's an opportunity to recognize and appreciate. However, if they're losing, it's certainly a coaching opportunity once you figure out what happened and what can be done about it. The second question is, how are you doing year to date? Are you progressing nicely towards accomplishing the three goals that have been agreed to? Number three is, what changes in the plan are needed? One of the things that is so important is to regularly review business plans and, in this case, success descriptions, because our world changes a lot. And nothing could be more inefficient than working on an obsolete plan. And the fourth question to ask during the monthly review is, what are your commitments for the next month? So the first tip is to establish one-page business plans for the position of goals, strategy, and metrics, and then have a monthly review with every direct report. What you will find is that the inevitable will be accelerated, and inevitably we want everybody to thrive and be A players or exit the organization, which sounds a little radical, but it's reality. The next technique for the organized executive to consider is having an excellent task management system. Rhetorically here, I ask all of you where you currently keep all of your to-do items, all of your tasks. This is a day and age where the good news is we have more excellent task management options than ever. That's also the bad news. We have so many options. Which one do you select? The important recommendation is to choose what's comfortable for you, as opposed to what somebody else said you, quote, should use. A task management system is either digitally or paper-based. There is still a segment of our population that is more comfortable working with paper and pen. So if we stick with that slide on task management, if you are one of those people, the recommendation is to use one of two tools that are still available, either the Daytimer or the Franklin Covey planning system. However, the digital task management system is one where you probably have it right at your fingertips. For example, if you're a Microsoft Outlook user and are not using the task management component of it, in my opinion, you're missing out on arguably the best part of the Outlook software. Also, it's important to note that if you are one of those people, you're not alone. Hardly anybody uses it, and I believe it's because many people just did not have the appropriate training and coaching on how to use it. If you're a Mac user, the Reminders in Mac, which of course is also available on iPhones and iPads, is also an excellent task management system. Those are just two examples of digitally based ones. Whether you are an Android or an Apple phone user, just go to the various stores, iPhone store, et cetera, the App Store. There are just an enormously high number of things available to us today. Once you select an excellent task management system, and by the way, yellow pads, post-its, whiteboards, blotter pads, memory, those are not considered excellent. Once you do have one, the idea is to fully populate it and have a due date or a deadline on each task. A task without a due date is merely a philosophical statement that sounds good, but the key question is, when is it due? And finally, with regards to task management, you want to sort it, if it's a digital system, chronologically. Therefore, when you come to work, let's say tomorrow, tomorrow is May 17th, everything that you need to do, should do, et cetera, will be on top of your task list, and it accelerates getting into gear for the work day. The next tip or technique is about personal planning. And there are two things we cover here. One technique is called the workday bookends. The other is called weekly planning. Covering the workday bookends for a moment, statistically, as much as 97% of people who work for a living today begin their work days and work weeks with little or no formal planning whatsoever. Therefore, less than 3% are formal, proactive planners. It has become so commonplace not to plan that the day is either hijacked or derailed within the first 15 minutes, mostly by email and interruptions. It's a very productive way to work, but certainly not a very effective and efficient way to work. The other thing to note at this point is that we can work 24/7 just about anywhere in the world today, which although sounds great, it's really not. It's affecting people's personal lives immeasurably. There are no borders or parameters to the workday anymore. In response to that, I designed a technique called the workday bookends, which asks you to frame your workday with 2 15-minute commitments. The first 15 minutes of the day is called the morning startup. Essentially, it's getting ready for the day. What do you do during the morning startup? Well, essentially, it's identifying the precious few priorities to be accomplished for the day. Similar to a success description, I recommend you begin your workday by identifying the top three priorities to be accomplished by close of business. And if you do the math here, if you have a department of 10 people, and every one of those 10 people commits to their top three first 15 minutes of the day, and hypothetically accomplish all three of them, we have the opportunity, if that happens every day of the week, to accomplish 150 priorities per week. Even if you accomplish 80% of those, that's still a significant statistic. It all starts by changing the way the day is started. And so few people start their work days that day. The other bookend is called the daily wrap-up. It's how you end the day. The worst way to end the workday is to drop the last thing or end the last thing you were working on and leave for the day. Yet that's how most people seem to operate. The best way to end the day is to achieve closure by finishing up the priorities of the day, by downloading new tasks into the task system, by filing or tossing or deleting or shredding any unnecessary information and keeping and archiving necessary information, and just feeling a sense of being finished, at least for that moment. The workday bookends are transformational in nature, and you'll notice it right away. The people who do this, and I have presented it to a lot of people, who continue to tell me what a wonderful feeling it is to start and end the day this way. The next technique is another planning tool. It's the idea of weekly planning. Weekly planning is setting up and getting clear about what the priorities are for the week. There are three common days to do weekly planning. Friday afternoon, taking 15 to 30 minutes at the appropriate time is a good time to do it, a good day and time to do it, because it changes the complexion of weekends. Instead of being preoccupied during the weekend with all of the things that need to be done during the coming week, you get ready for those on Friday. Another time that some people like to do is sometime over the weekend. Of course, that's an option. But some people like to take a Sunday morning or a Sunday night or something along those lines to plan their week. And the third option would be first thing Monday morning. It doesn't matter when you do it as long as it happens every week. What do you do during weekly planning? Well, essentially it's looking at your master task list and reconciling it for realism and attainability. I, for one, am fairly notorious for having more things on my task list for the coming week than I can do, given the amount of meetings and commitments I have. Therefore, my weekly planning begins by paring my weekly list down and changing due dates that can be changed to later dates. That's not procrastination, that's postponement. So it starts by creating a realistic task list. Secondly, is to set up the calendar for the week. What does that mean? It means, number one, make sure you have all of your meetings set in your calendar and you know what days are coming up. You have start and stop times for those. It means, if you need to, scheduling travel time in your calendar so that you arrive to places on time and you're not rushing and hurrying. It means adding new tasks to your task list if you need any preparation time or things to get ready for regarding meetings that are coming up. It means scheduling time for yourself to accomplish your priorities. And one of the most important things to do in advance at weekly planning is to electronically delegate, as many things as you need to do with the proper lead time. There's an old saying that says poor planning on your part does not constitute an emergency or crisis on mine. That's a lead time issue. In fact, delegation without proper preparation and lead time typically feels like delegating to the person being delegated to. If you're in a leadership or management role, delegation is a very important skill set and one to be practiced every week with appropriate lead time. Weekly planning, the workday bookends, both are transformational. None of these things at this point are required in the workplace. Oftentimes I recommend, in the form of tough love, that CEOs and the like do require people to do these things because they'll do better. Dana, if you could somehow go to the next slide, number nine.
Okay. And I apologize to everybody for the technology issues here. We'll look into that afterwards. But the new slide will pop up probably 30 seconds or so.
Okay. And hopefully I'm going at a pace that where this is transmitting well.
Yep, perfect.
The one key area that has been an obstacle, roadblock, impediment, things like that, to high performance in the workplace has been summarized in one word, and that word is interruptions. Interruptions cause people to stop what they're doing, and actually, I'm sorry, let's go back, let's go to the one on the slide. The next slide is about PWT. PWT is an abbreviation for priority work time. It is defined in reverse, and it simply means time every day to work on priorities. If you're in a leadership or management role, my studies show that you need at least 1 to 2 hours every day to be unavailable, inaccessible, and for all intents and purposes, uninterruptible to work on the priorities of your day. It's a privacy issue. And that's difficult in today's world because of the open environment that has become so popular, which has a very significant upside. However, organizationally, it has a very significant downside. So if you don't have a door, having privacy makes doing priority work time rather difficult. Priority work time is recommended to be a recurring commitment in your calendar so that you can move it up or down. It's a placeholder. However, if that's not comfortable, it's a floating activity, which means every week at weekly planning, you look at white space availability for the coming week and put the letters PWT into 5 to 10 hours of week of calendar time. When PWT arrives during the day, you don't want to look around for something to do. You want to have it predetermined what you're going to spend time on during that 1 to 2 hours. And that is determined, of course, during the morning startup, during the workday bookend technique. If you have a door, I recommend it be closed. If not, I recommend to a lot of organizations to invest in visual aids, such as an orange cone that's on the desk. Many people are using earphones to designate that they're not to be disturbed unless it's critical. Some people can, many can't work without being distracted by notifications. I recommend you silence notifications. Put your phone on airplane mode or do not disturb, things like that. And finally, provide acute focus and concentration doing one thing at a time. There's an old Irish proverb that comes to mind here. It says the way to do many things is to do one thing at a time. Some of you would be well advised to slow it down a little bit and increase your focus and concentration. Priority work time, PWT. The next slide is about the interruptions I started talking about earlier. Priority work time, of course, softens the blow of interruptions in the sense that at least you have this 1 to 2 hours of time to get work done. The technique for interruptions, and one important point to make here, is that the customer or the client is never, never an interruption. Yet interruptions is such a prominent disruptor of the workday, so where's the problem? Well, it's internal. People within the business, within the building, interrupting others seemingly constantly. The Pareto rule, P-A-R-E-T-O, applies here. Some of you may know it as the 80-20 rule. The application interruptions suggest that as much as 80% of all interruptions that happen in the course of a workday within your business did not have to happen at that moment. Yet because there is no policy and procedure in place, it's everybody for themselves. It's stimulus response. It's very habitual, inefficient behavior. So the question to be asked before an interruption is caused is whether this interruption is really important right now. And I recommend that as a visual aid, as an example. So if you could picture a post-it with the question that reads, is this really important right now? The policy of the organization should be, unless that is yes, please do not interrupt other people during the workday. Now, 20% of those interruptions are important right now. So we're not eliminating interruptions. We're just reducing the amount of unjustified ones. Bottom line here is the responsibility for improving the culture that is interrupted or disrupted a lot is on the part of the person doing the interrupting. As far as the interruptees, the people being interrupted, please note you cannot be interrupted without your permission. You have to say yes, and sometimes you, of course, don't have the choice. This is one area that I would jump on organizationally if it's a problem internally, is to create a clearly defined policy or guideline that is launched throughout the company, throughout the business, that gets everybody to be much more sensitive of the effect of their behavior on other people's workloads and workdays. We move to acutely clear delegation. My travels and my studies, I've seen a lot of examples and definitions of just what a successful leader is. One of my favorites goes like this. It said that a successful leader, a successful manager, is someone who continually accomplishes predetermined priorities primarily through the efforts of other people. So in a word, we're talking about delegation. The phrase acutely clear suggests how important it is to be very specific with what we want when we delegate and most importantly, when we want it. There are five options related to delegation. We can either email, see the person, call them, send a text, or hold it until we have three things and then set up a meeting to cover at least three things. I would say, unfortunately, too many people are defaulting to email regardless of the urgency. Text messaging is a growing tool as well, yet there's so many organizations that don't have clear guidelines, and when it isn't, it's not appropriate to text other people. So one of the first things about being clear about delegation is to make sure everybody is clear about which tool, which of those five to use. We also want to practice the no dumping rule. I mentioned that a few moments ago. Dumping is coming to a person at the last minute with, by the way, I forgot to tell you this, or can you do this real quick? That's that poor planning concept. With regards to the specifics, what and when, I recommend that we avoid using expressions such as whenever you get around to it, as soon as possible, sometime this week, sometime in the next few days, within the next couple of weeks, sometime in the next few months, by Friday. Those are so commonly used, yet so meaningless in definition. It's just as easy to say, ideally, if you can get it to me no later than this Friday noon, that would be great, as opposed to by Friday. Because when you say to somebody by Friday, they may be thinking 5 o'clock, but if you want it at noon, that's a five-hour swing. With the proper tone, it does not feel like micromanagement at all. So I'd ask you to be sensitive to how clear you are when you convey what you want and when you want it, which leads to email delegation. I would suggest that a requirement in the workplace today, not a request, a requirement should be that every email needs to be proofread before it is sent. Emails should be written from the receiver's perspective and proofread accordingly. Therefore, in this context, the proofreading asks, if I were receiving this email, would I be acutely clear with what this person wants and when they want it? Because if the answer is no, simply put, it is not ready to go. Acutely clear delegation. We move to the next slide, which is about group meetings. Meetings have always been a source of wasted time for many people and organizations. Meetings can be out of control in a sense. I'm an advocate of a protocol, which means that every group meeting that's applicable within any organization be run exactly the same way in format. Content is different, format recommended to be the same. So what constitutes that protocol? Well, you see it on the screen, hopefully. It begins with organized agendas. A policy or guideline that's recommended goes like this. It says no agenda, no meeting. A meeting without an organized agenda is a meeting that should be postponed or canceled. A meeting agenda template is also recommended, so everybody who leads a meeting fills out the same form. And on that template, I recommend a space on the top of it where the meeting leader needs to determine the cost of that meeting, because time is money. And therefore, the agenda for the meeting should have an ROI, return on investment, of that amount, if not more, or else it needs to be canceled, shortened, have less people, or have a better agenda. Meetings are recommended to always start and stop on time. Never wait for latecomers because it's disrespectful to those who are there. Never go into overtime unless there's consensus agreement that everybody can stay. Active participation means nobody sits silently. Excellent note-taking is a designated note-taker recommendation where one person is the scribe using maybe a laptop and a projector so that the notes are on the screen. And finally, the last 5 to 10 minutes of a meeting should be to wrap it up, where three questions are asked and answered. Number one, what did we commit to doing and assign? Number two, who is accountable and responsible for what we've assigned? And number three, when can we expect delivery? Those are the items that constitute the group meeting protocol. Our next slide is about the ever-popular tool and technology of email. Simply put, the question is whether email for you is a blessing or a curse. There are those among us who love email. There are those who dread it. Let's begin by pointing out that the inbox and sent items folders are not designed as file folders. Therefore, if you have hundreds or even thousands of emails in your system, you may be using your email system very inefficiently. The inbox under the active only system suggests you keep only emails in your inbox needing a reply. Everything else is either responded to, deleted, archived, forwarded, or made a task out of if you know how to do that. Similarly, the sent items folder is where money can be left on the table every month. That's for emails waiting for a reply so we can follow up and follow through appropriately. During the next 2 to 4 weeks, you might want to reset your email system and watch how good it feels to have a whole lot less in your inbox and sent items folders if you follow the active-only system. One more tip on email at this point, and that is to put the oldest emails, not the newest ones, on top. Take care of yesterday before you take care of today. We have a few more to cover, two in particular. The next technique is about proactively scheduled one-to-one briefings. Every direct report needs at least 15 to 30 minutes of their boss's undivided attention every week. They have things to talk about. If you do not have proactively scheduled recurring briefings, it's a high recommendation. The agenda to cover is a four-part one where the direct report provides to their boss updates and progress reports since they last met, non-critical questions and problems accompanied by proposed answers and solutions. It's where the boss in this example provides acutely clear delegation for the next 1 to 2 weeks and any other items to be covered. My recommendation is if you have six or less direct reports, you do this weekly. If not, maybe every other week. And follow this type of agenda and receive the updates, progress reports, and non-critical questions and problems by 5 p.m. night before, so that it's an efficiently used time. Our last technique is about clutter. The good news here is that offices are a whole lot less cluttered in 2019 than they have been over the first 35 years of my career. The bad news is we've got a lot of techno clutter going on, which are stacks and stacks of emails and documents electronically. If you have a cluttered environment, whether it's an office, a workspace, or a desktop, the recommendation is to begin by purging and deleting or essentially eliminating the unnecessary from your world. It's a good thing to do at home as well, a home purge of the unnecessary. We're still in spring cleaning oriented. What you do with things that you want to keep is to file, archive, or store them, having a place for everything and putting things in their place. Having the commitment to maintain is key. If you're not willing to maintain it, you're really wasting time achieving an uncluttered environment and making the maintenance a daily activity. And the best time to do that is during the daily wrap-up as part of the bookends. There is one more suggestion that I make, and then we can address some questions, and that would be to establish behavioral guidelines within your organization, creating a task force to define what organizational characteristics or behaviors are essential for the success of the company or business, launching those to all staff, training people on how to do those things, and then tracking for adherence really changes and transforms the culture. What I've shared with you today in part are a lot of the guidelines that should go into that. having people start their day with a plan, managing interruptions, keeping only active emails in the inbox and sent items folder, having effective and efficient meetings that follow a protocol, delegation with clarity. Those are all behavior guidelines. Having those in a document that is adhered to can really make the difference. So that completes the presentation part. Dana, I'll turn it over to you.
Sure.
If you,
Bruce,
know of any questions.
That was great. Just phenomenal. And I got to tell you, I follow your guidelines the best I can, and it's been so helpful and beneficiary. It changes how one lives. It makes life a lot easier by following these guidelines. So I want to thank you so much for being on Open Line. I'm going to turn the recording feature off, and then we're going to open up the line for people to ask questions directly to Bruce. A couple suggestions. We have quite a number of people on the program today. So I'd like everyone to please mute your phone. Mute your phone. Don't put it on hold. Otherwise, we'll all hear music. So mute your phone and then unmute it if you have a question for Bruce. So give me just 1 second here to open the line up. We'll be right back.